Edge Resistance.
What's up? This is Saul Williams chilling here in Montreal here on CKUT. Peace.
We pledge alliance with those who have undergone attack for voicing opposition to the war.
My name is Neil Morris, a.k.a. Dreaming Now. I am a First Nations man from the Yorta people. And firstly, I want to acknowledge this land that I am on. And I say Nanga Namulana Yenbana, Yota Yota Waka. I pay respect to this land. I pay respect to the spirit and the ancestors in this land. And I acknowledge that our sovereignty has not been ceded. I'm in the Clitheroe clan group area of Yota Yota country. And I am a custodian of country. I am a custodian who has an obligation to continue Indigenous law into the now.
Yeah, we stand upon a land of an ancient wisdom, creator, spirit, beautiful, strong. Yes, it giveth life for these sacred lands, eternal systems deliver through the sun to the depths. It glisten, stars in the night, crystallized life. Ancestors' prayers in my ears, so sublime. Blood in the soil, never forget or deny. That anguish deprives the ongoing genocide. The devastation, theft, and wiping out of tribes. Remorseless attacks, heinous crimes. Poison in the waters, but the people we survived, inscribed with lies and decimated with deceitful bribes. But the people we survived, pay respect and give love and thanks one time. One time, one time. Peace, love, and unity to all my originals rise. The ancestors in the land amidst every child, woman and man, no matter where you stand. The ancestors in the land, so I pay respect. The ancestors in the land amidst every child, woman and man, no matter where you stand. The ancestors in the land, so I pay respect.
It's always been vital that the people on the ground need to be getting messages out to the masses as much as possible. It's an obligation, it's a duty, and it's something that our people have been doing for as long as what we've been able to since colonialism began to have a big impact on our lands. Indigenous organising around creating messaging and Indigenous propaganda machines going back to, you know, early newspapers that were put together with the support of different groups and such has been absolutely integral to our survival. So for me, I guess I see that I do what I can in that space in the modern day, so to speak, and through my music as well, hopefully have a bit of a ripple effect with that can leave impressions with people that lead to, I guess, empowerment of the position that they're in, and whether that means continuing to do the work that they're doing or to give them some greater awareness to do other work that maybe they weren't doing beforehand. That's really important to me.
Tungulajaya kapna barbarik.
It's still very easy for people to fetishize Indigenous storytelling, and I think it's very important that we ensure that we don't take that on. Others' views of that can then impact on how we hold ourselves, and I think that happens a lot. We can lose sight of how powerful our role as keepers of these narratives and the actual depth of that in terms of our obligations as Indigenous people. If we're to look at our roles as nothing different than from thousands of years ago, then there's actually a really sacred function that's still in every single thing that we do to uphold our position as First Nations people.
We've been here since the beginning, descended from sacred obligations. We still stand by those. As we dream in the now. Born into where the sloping, slippery, checked history, man, it's been no mystery. Stolen, removed, indigenous liberty, space, power, before understanding and humility. Armed with artillery, hostilities, preyed upon to the cages. Never realizing they the wrong, greatest songs with average, by celebrating strong, calibrating, emanating, and shaking, and your thong, did it. In the lands, wisdom we do belong. These words are seeds that thieves can never take from. Ow, mother's womb prison always beyond apocalypses and wrong. So don't extinction. Roman restriction, trapped in missions, the colonial system, assimilation prescription. Spirit never trapped, we always hear glisten. Ancestors, wisdom forevermore given, yo. Yes, we will always survive.
I can still remember it really vividly when I was 16, 17, which was just before I really started to get seriously into writing, that there was something there that was extremely strong in regards to using voice and using story, that at that point probably hadn't really tapped into what that could mean and how I could use it in a meaningful way. And definitely, I guess I felt like I had to go through a lot of different life experiences myself to grow into someone who then has a right to speak in a way that is informed. And that took me through various different experiences to grow as a human. And that included a lot of listening to particularly our elders within community and, you know, aunties, uncles, my mother and older cousins, even just people who'd seen a little bit more and really, you know, I guess going through some challenging times, it forced me to, you know, seek out that guidance and seek out that understanding and wisdom from people who had seen a lot more and understand how to balance, I guess, one's identity in this world. And I learnt a lot from those years and those listenings to others that, I guess, you know, then it did come to a point probably about 7 years ago now where I started to really come down to this point of being like, this is that moment, or this is that time, this is that period for me to really explore what my voice can do in the world and how it can be meaningful. And it was in fact through spoken word, through poetry that I first began to do that. And one of the special things for me in doing that through poetry was, I guess, entering into spaces where there was a consciousness around really listening to people and listening closely and attentive to that. So definitely going through those kind of spaces was really valuable for me to feel that what I was saying had a value, even as, you know, myself still as, you know, by standards of a whole lifespan, still a pretty young person. But, you know, it started to feel okay to do that. And once I started to do that a bit from a span of a couple of years, then I started to look at how maybe I could start incorporating my lyrics and stories into song. And it was definitely that grounding that made it feel okay for me to then take story into song. So it was really one step at a time. And I guess there were other steps before that as well, such as doing talks back in my community around raising awareness of culture. So in working in the cultural education space as well before that. So there's this, I guess, this gradual, you know, baby steps that got me to that point of actually just using a song as a more, I guess, something that can, you know, it's a really interesting thing. I still think about it a lot, is how songs still, it's just one of the mediums that has the ability to get dispersed far and wide in a way that many other forms of communication don't have that capability. So I really acknowledge that gravity of song, but at the same time, never take for granted the opportunity and the depth, and also the importance to make sure when I step into song that I make sure I'm bringing as much of what is it that took me to song, to not just step into making music and then leaving parts of myself behind. That's something I was always really mindful of doing when I was younger, and it made me hold off on writing songs because I just didn't feel that I had what it took to bring everything to the table within music. But, you know, I'm still definitely growing in that regard, but I at least feel that there's some seeds that have been sown that make it feel like it is okay to use song as this way of conveying this, I guess, sacred responsibility.
Australia does not exist. Australia does not exist.
I believe counter-narratives are really, really extremely powerful. And my song Australia Does Not Exist was definitely, that was the intention around that. And I look at it from a standpoint of the there's also spiritual implications that affect, you know, the social and the psychological of a society when you create narratives and you ingrain that into a society. And it's really evident throughout so-called Australian society how deeply ingrained the consciousness of Australia and what it means to be so-called Australian and all of these Australianisms. And you have things such as when people don't align with that, or for example, there might be behavior that is considered bad behavior. There's this wielding of this "you're un-Australian" kind of rhetoric that gets rolled out, and it's really prevalent, particularly within politics and mainstream media. This whole "that was very un-Australian of such and such to do such and such," and it's based on the premise of there being this supposed accepted understanding that Australia is the fair country. So that's all part of this narrative that was really reinforced over generations, was Australia the fair country. Australia, the lucky country. So if you behaved in a way that wasn't considered fair, then you would get caught un-Australian. It's this really vicious cycle that is definitely, for me, a part of the propaganda machine. And it's quite clear as day to see that it's that. So, you know, in that all considered, for me, definitely creating a track such as "Australia Does Not Exist," that was a way for me to clear the illusion, clear the air, really, as much as anything. That song was about saying everything you've ever said about how so-called Australia is just and fair and all of these things. It's actually not accurate. And in fact, to get down to the legalistic definitions, to look at how Australia was founded, or so-called founded, on the principles of terra nullius, that was found to be false law through the Eddie Mabo case, which was a very famous case that a lot of people talk to through the Torres Strait Islands. Eddie Mabo was successful in a case in regards to a native indigenous title over land on the basis of debunking the notion of the reality and the actuality of the terra nullius, meaning no man's land, which so-called Australia was claimed on the basis of. So when we go back to that, it's very apparent that what grounding does the construct of Australia really have. So for me, that track was definitely really important in doing that. And then my following track, which came after that, went by the name of Indigenous Land. And again, that was the same thing with the counter narrative. And I guess, you know, the erasure of Indigenous people has been so profound, and even very particularly in the, I guess you would say, in the Southeast, or, you know, sometimes even in the Southwest, less so in the Southwest, but particularly in the Southeast, which is anywhere, I guess, south of Brisbane in Queensland, going all the way down to New South Wales, Victoria, Tasmania, and parts of South Australia as well. There's the notions that, particularly in these areas, that Aboriginality doesn't exist anymore, and that Aboriginal culture is gone. And in some places, for example, you could grow up in the city of Melbourne and never meet an Aboriginal person your whole upbringing. I've met so many people who've grown up their whole youth and never met an Aboriginal person, which is incredible to me that this is a common experience of a lot of people who grow up in certain parts of. If you grow up in the east of Melbourne, there's a good chance that either you never met an Aboriginal growing up, or you've never met an Aboriginal ever. And that same goes for other rural centres where Aboriginal populations are being decimated entirely, and other big chunks of larger cities across the country as well. So, you know, there's this whole narrative that we've really had to put a lot of work into demystifying, and that's required a lot of labor from Indigenous people, which it's really interesting to think about how there's so much labor put into that, which means that that's unfortunately less labor that's being done just actually practicing culture in terms of a classical sense of, you know, caring for country and playing your role within kinship within your community and what that looks like. I guess it's a contemporary form of culture, then. It's a contemporary cultural role to have to rewrite the script of what this country and what all the constructs of this land that are actually true and authentic and connected to the essence of what this place actually is. So, you know, that's a cultural act in itself. That's for me, that's a part of Aboriginal law, is to uphold your culture. And if that means rewriting a script that has been handed to you in falsehood, then that's a contemporary form of Indigenous cultural practice, which is linked back to ancient Indigenous cultural obligations.
First we'll take that land, take it for our own. Those who take a stand will kneel before the throne, kneel before the crown, hands on the ground, then we'll take all the kids. Hush, don't make a sound, nothing but savages. We'll show them how they're supposed to live, and if they don't assimilate, I guess we'll have to demonstrate.
For me, it hits my, you know, heart of hearts, seeing any people that I identify as Indigenous from across the whole globe, or any persecuted people that are unfairly targeted, that, you know, even if they're not Indigenous, for example, black people in Turtle Island and so on and so forth as well. For me, it's all rooted to colonial behaviour of some kind or another, and that can manifest absolutely anywhere. It can manifest in our own communities, and that's, I guess, mathematically, that's a likelihood that colonial behaviours can manifest anywhere. So I'm really cognizant of that and really sensitive to that. And, you know, when I saw what was going down in Palestine, definitely it was a case of feeling, you know, it violates my sense of humanity as well when I see any other group that might be Indigenous identifying from any part of the globe. And definitely Palestine is a place for me that there's so many similarities to over here in so-called Australia. And I think, you know, one of the great tragedies is how colonialism muddies the waters so that people can't see what's what. They can't see the forest from the trees in terms of what's really colonial activity going on. And I think that's been a problem with places like Palestine. And also people can get really defensive really easily about being targeted when they see themselves as being innocent. And I guess that's in Australia as well. People are still so hell-bent on upholding the colony that they can't even see the fact that they descend from people that were murderers. And I say that in the sense of, like, that was what it was. Like, I'm not persecuting you for what your ancestors did at all. Like, don't get defensive, but just acknowledge the history of what has taken place to get to where we are. You can't just act like whatever happened didn't happen.
This always was, and always will be a land of countless Indigenous nations, none of which are called Australia.
This whole mentality of get over it, move on, that's prevalent in so-called Canada and anywhere in the world where there's Indigenous people who want justice. And so for me, you know, that's the same thing with Palestine. I know that it's a really tricky circumstance, and there's people from the other side of the fence that have different views about what's going on over there. But for me, there's genocidal activity going on those people. And so if there's any way that I can support that in any shape or form, I'm always ready to do that. You know, bonding with people such as a movement such as this for me is one of the most crucial ways to do it. And definitely amongst, you know, again, when I come back to the narratives of being a communicator through using music, like, for me, this is where, and I know, like, the majority of musicians don't use their platform for social good. That's a tragedy in the way that, you know, you've been gifted with this great opportunity to deliver narratives. You don't have to put it in your songs itself, but if you've been given platform from this craft of song, then for me, you do have some level of responsibility to impact on social change and liberation for humanity. That's what you're supposed to return for having a gift in music. For me, that's my outlook to it, and not to judge people that don't do that, but I feel that responsibility call on me really intensely. And so, you know, that's been great about this movement, is to see that you've got musicians from all different walks of life, all different ethnic backgrounds, acknowledging responsibility and unifying on that. And I think that's one of the most powerful things that we can do, is collectivize as holders of narratives, and particularly music. I think it needs to be really reinforced and understood what we're dealing with when we have this platform that is so unique in terms of the world. Music is one of the most consumed things in the planet outside of food, you know, and water. It's central to the lives of humanity, generally speaking. So there is that crucial need that, for me, we don't really have a choice. It's just, what are the choices you then make within that advocacy that you do as somebody that has a platform formed through song and story ultimately.
CKUT 90.3 FM, Montreal.
Thank you. We'll be right back. the breeze flow straight out of our lids. Them, they got boo bodies, hard rock Brooklyn kids. Us, floor rush, when they DJ booming classics. You dig the crew on the fattest hip-hop record. He touched the kinks and sinks into the sounds. She frequents deep, fatter joints called undergrounds. Our funk zooms like you hit the Mary Jane. They flock to booms, man, Boogie had to change. Who freaks the clips with mad amount percussion? Where kinky hair goes to unthought of dimensions? Why's it so fly? Cause hip-hop kept some drama. When Butterfly rocked the light blue suede boomers. What about a cut? We push it off the corner. How was the buzz entire hip-hop era? Was fresh in fact since they started saying Audi? Cause funk's made fat from right beneath my hood. The pooba of the styles like Miles and shit. Like 60s funky worms with waves and perms. Just sending junky rhythms right down your block. We beat to rap, what key beat to lock, but I'm cool like that, 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 I'm cool, I'm cool.
We beat the chocolates, taps to my raps. She innovates after sweeter cat naps. He at the funk club with the vibrate. Them, they be crazy down with the 5 feet. It can kick a plan, then a crowd burst. Me, I be digging it with the bug burst. Us, we be freaking till dawn, peace and I. He gets a stranger smile, so I say hi.
What's up?
Who understood? Yeah, understood the plans. Him heard of it and put it to his hands. What I just flip, let borders get loose.
What's the matter? Is everything all right? That's okay. I've got just the right thing for you. CKUT 90.3.
Since we've been talking about it for over a year, and you probably already know anyway, we've decided not to say it this time. So we're not going to tell you again that to protect yourself from COVID-19, you should wash your... And we certainly won't repeat once more that you should wear a... Or most importantly, that we must keep our... From others. Because you already know this is the best way to fight the virus. Even when you're vaccinated, let's continue to protect ourselves. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Radio with Widget and my man Pro V.
All the way live from university.
Damn, Montreal.
On CKUT. Nobody do it better, dog.
90.3 FM.
Gone.
CKUT and the place to be from the bottom to the TOP.
This program is uncut. It contains strong language and some adult situations. Discretion is advised.
All the way live radio, CKUT 90.3 FM, every single Wednesday from 3 to 5.